Hello and welcome to the Gridiron Gentlemen Collegiate Draft podcast for the NFL Draft 2026. Just as a bit of background, I am an idiot. We recorded or thought we'd recorded a full episode on the Combine. Dan was unable to find it, and James does not think I hit record. So that's why you never got anything last week. I can only apologise. I have been not had time to try and look into fixing that issue, but I made sure and double checked that we're recording this time. So if you're listening to this, then it's worked. For joining me tonight, as always, and you would have known what we were doing tonight if I'd hit record last week, but it's James, and we'll be going through defensive tackles tonight. How are you, James?
I'm great. By the way, don't feel too bad about not hitting record on a podcast because our fearless leader Dan has done that at least once that I
Yeah, but
can
usually
remember.
he
At the same
realizes while
time,
we're on
also
it and we
Dan
just
is
need
the
to
person.
start again.
No. He's we've done a whole podcast and he's not hit record and not realized till after we've done it. Also, you haven't recorded a 7, 8 minute long interview with an NFL player and forgotten to hit record.
I have not, mainly because I've never
Can't play
interviewed
all.
7, 8 minutes in NFL player, so there is that. But moving on from my failures as a person and a podcast host and all the rest, defensive tackles. We have decided to split out defensive tackles from edge because we could be here all night and we do have lives, surprisingly. So we'll do the defensive tackles. We're thinking, we had a quick conversation before, not any detail, just how many deep we're going to go. And we're thinking there's a drop off. James thinks a drop off after six. I've got a drop off after five. We don't know if my five are even in his six or not, because as everyone knows, it's eye of the beholder. But we will run through five,
Absolutely.
six players, go in a bit of detail. All these guys should go top three rounds anyway. I think most will go top two. I'd be surprised if any make it out the second, but you never know. I also would have been baffled that Shedeur Sanders made it to the fifth round, so you just never know. So how do I do? Do you want to start like 5, 6 to 1, or because or not it's not really like a top 10, should we just start with number one?
I think I think it's fine. I mean, I think, and also the reason that D-line is, it's important we do a separate D-line episode, not just because we've done it separate every year, but I think the Super Bowl taught us that great interior defensive linemen, it take you a long, long way in an NFL season. So if I look at the Patriots interior and I look at the Seahawks interior, that's two of the best run stopping, pass rushing interiors in the league. And it's no coincidence that they were able to sort of find their way to a Super Bowl and do so by dominating defensively. And I think their tackle pairings were very much a part of that.
Yeah, it's the old adage, if you can get pressure up the middle, it just suits everything. If you can get pressure up the middle, especially, what it allows you to do is allows you to rush with four. And rushing with four, if you can get home, changes everything. Because it just allows, there's nowhere for the alignment to give support to the edge if your guy up the middle is causing havoc. And it's a position that I think is greatly underrated at times, because the stat sheet's not always great. That's not tends to be unless you're Aaron Donald. The interior linemen, their stat sheets don't always jump off the page as much. They often get pressure, but what often happens is they got a lot of pressures and not a lot of sacks because the quarterback can tend to evade interior pressure, but what tends to happen is he runs straight into your edge pressure or his own tackles, and that's where the sack comes. So it doesn't tend to, they cause the sack without getting the statistic of the sack all often, if that makes sense. Start with number one. I think based on our conversations in the college pod, I'd be very surprised if our number one is not the same. We spoke about this guy quite a lot, even though his team was absolutely woeful and gave me a false sense of security. as to how good I thought my team was going to be week one.
Yeah.
Peter Woods is my number one. Right.
He's mine too.
Yeah, I thought that. He's not a consensus number one, which I find surprising, but based on our
It's
conversations, I had an idea he'd be your number one.
yeah, I think the player is a number one player, but I think in the eyes of a lot of draft analysts and maybe even some teams, the combine, the measurements harmed him, with him turning up with, it wasn't expected that he was going to have the measurements he had. And long story short, it's basically all about his arm length. So when Peter Woods turned up and was measured at the combine, he measured with, let me just see if I've got these measurements, 31 inch arms. So, and 9 inch hands and a 76 inch wingspan, which is not massive when you are 6'2 and just short of 300 pounds. So the concern is that lack of length, if you like, would take him off a lot of people's draft boards, especially when you consider that DT potentially isn't considered a premium position. So, like, where you might find Reuben Bain drops to like the teens, there are people predicting he could fall as far as 30, maybe even round two, based on those measurements, which I think is
If he's
stupid.
there at 33, the Jets better rush that pick in if he's there at 33.
You see, I think it's really interesting because there are people saying that they think he's going to fall to 33, and like on the PFF big board, he's gone from being ranked like 5th to 30th in the course of a week. And then on other big boards, he drops like 20 spots as well because of these measurements. But I wouldn't exclude certain team matches whereby you think he's going to fall to 30, but then suddenly a
Just takes
team
one.
where the fit is perfect just goes and grabs him. So, I mean, I think if like you've got someone like Detroit might be tempted by a player like him. And I mean, the reason for it that you can see that happening is because if you didn't know how long his arms were, you wouldn't care. So at 6'3, 200, he's just short of 6'3, he's 298 pounds he weighed in the combine, but he was listed at 310 at the start of this season. He was sort of splitting a lot of his time this year between defensive end and defensive tackle. So I think there was a little bit of being miscast to play this year, so his production was ever so slightly down. But what you get with Peter Woods is you get a player who is all about explosiveness and power, who is great at both phases of defensive tackle play. He's really, really good at pass rush, a really, really good pass rusher, capable of winning inside with power and explosiveness. The arms never really show up on film. You don't see guards getting into his frame and holding him down. And when he's double teamed, he just sticks his knee in the dirt and holds up and just drives the gap back. And it's like, as a run defender, he's exceptional. He's a fantastic tackler, and he's just someone who, he was number five on Bruce Feldman's freaks list as well, in spite of his T-Rex arms. He's like one of the leanest. What was it? When he was measured as a freshman at Clemson, had the highest percentage of lean muscle mass of anybody on that 90-person squad. As a freshman, he had 240 pounds of lean muscle, which is double what most people would have. So he's
That's
a
like a lot of
remarkable
people's.
athlete.
That's against. There's NFL players who weigh that. Like,
Exactly.
total. Like, weigh less than. A lot less than that, but like receivers. There's some receivers that weigh like 180.
He didn't test at the combine. He just turned up with a bad haircut in his pajamas. But He was timed in the 40 last summer, and he ran a 4.86 at £300,
Faster
which
than
is
Brady.
ridiculous. Yeah, not hard. But like, you think of that as an the athlete that he is, and you think of the player that he is, and it's very, very easy to kind of think, well, short arms be damned. If he's there at like 15, 16, 17, who's to say that a good team who just happened to be picking a little bit higher than they used to don't go, let's give this a go? Because I can see Detroit. I could even see the Vikings if things fell right for them. Brian Flores would just be like, yeah, I'll have some of that. And then
Kansas
when you get into
City
the
getting the
20s, you
long-term answer to Chris Jones.
oh, don't say that. Yeah, basically. And I don't think that it would be I don't think it would be a terrible idea. I don't think anybody would kind of hate them for it. And you can say that arm length doesn't matter on the interior. It does matter on the interior, but it only matters on the interior if it's ever showed up before on film. And I don't think I've ever had pause for thought with Peter Woods because someone's been able to hold the play. I don't really understand. And one of the ways that he negates that as like a player is he plays with an exceptional pad level. He's just so explosive out of 3 and 4 point stance, and just his power and the explosiveness in a tight short area is just wrecks the whole game.
Matt.
So for me, across the board, in every phase, except for measurables, he is probably an 8 out of 10 at everything.
The thing that gets me with him is he's got like a non-stop. Sorry, are you still there? It kind of cut out for a second there. And we're back. I can see you again. Can you hear me? Hello?
Sorry, I've had a bandwidth problem. I had to turn video off. So just go with audio. Sorry, Josh.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now. Yeah, I couldn't
Perfect.
before. I've turned the
That's good.
video off now so I can actually hear.
Fine. So my big thing with him is he's got like a non-stop motion engine, and it's like at 315 pounds, the amount of plays that he doesn't get beat a lot, but when he got beat and the quarterback got away, he just kept going and kept going, and that's massive in the NFL because you're not going to win against the NFL D-line guards and centers that often, as much as you would in college. How many times have games won with sacks at 6, 7 seconds because the quarterbacks evaded it and eventually get caught up, or the running backs took a pause and you've caught them 4 yards down the field when it could have been an 80-yard gap? That second, not second level, but kind of second rush almost, is a massive one as well. And at £315, there's not a lot of guys that have that. My only concern is it's the same with a lot of guys who are athletic freaks. You can be an athletic freak in college and get away with it. Sometimes the next level, you're going up against a lot of guys that are also athletic freaks. But there's
Where's that?
that is just, it's not a weakness, it's just a concern with anybody who wins with athleticism. You just never really know how that'll translate to another level of athleticism. But I don't see it being a problem. I do wonder if, and we've kind of highlighted this on our draft one last week that's lost in ether. The Will Campbell short arms, although it's the other side of the ball, it really showed up this year. Like when you look at his pass rush success rate against, there's like a Mendoza line almost, whereby if the edge rushers got long arms, Will Campbell got smoked. If the edge rushers got short arms, well, Will Campbell was excellent. And I agree with what you're saying. That often showed up on tape at college, whereas it hasn't with Peter Woods. But I just wonder if there's that wee part in scouts and GMs, etc., that now short arms are a thing that people are talking about a lot recently, and if it just puts teams off. Now there's a limit to how far you'll fall because of that, because that won't be all teams, but there could be a few teams that are wanting that position and just end up going another route because they're just in their head as short arms are a problem.
Well, it's ever so slightly different for interior defensive linemen. With an edge rusher, it's very, very important. It's much more important. And I think with tackles, it's more important. On the interior, it's not that it's not important. It's just that it can be less important because when you're on the interior, things like leverage and natural power can kind of overcome that. Also, you're already really quite close to the person you're taking on the interior anyway. So when you start 2 yards away from the person in front of you, if you were to both just extend your arms and your arms were only 30 inches long, you'd probably already be touching anyway. And that's where things like pad level power and explosiveness from the ground up can really come into it. And the thing about Peter Woods is that he's got the kind of player profile at defensive tackle that really, really sort of more often than not is more advantageous. And that is basically, and it sounds really obvious, but it's power. If you have anybody who plays on the defensive line that is powerful and explosive, they generally, the floor when they transition to the NFL tends to be that little bit higher, especially on the interior, because, strength is and the interior is initially king. It sets the baseline. If you're highly skilled but not very strong, there's only so far you can go. Whereas if you're strong and skilled, there is a much better ceiling.
What's
So, for
like
example,
receivers? There's a you can't teach pace.
no,
You
you
can't
can't.
teach speed, you can't teach power. You can improve it, but I will never be extremely powerful. I can be more powerful than I am, but there's a distinct limit on how powerful I can get. And it's kind of
Exactly.
similar.
And it's like there are some people who are just, even for their size, powerful. So if you think about Aaron Donald coming out of Pitt, he was undersized and he was an outlier. He was under 300 pounds, interior defensive lineman, but he played like he was 50 pounds heavier. He played
Except
like
when
he
it
was
came to
50 pounds.
speed, he could run like he was
But
the
he
weight he
was.
was.
Yeah, but he was explosive with power at that weight. And I'm not saying that's what Peter Woods is, but it's a similar kind of thing where there's that explosiveness, that power in a body that is relatively undersized in terms of arm length. But that's it. He's still 6'3" and up, just over 300 pounds at playing weight. So it's like he's not small. And it's never been a problem for me. So yeah, I think that someone's going to get a bargain.
What would you consider a bargain? Like, how far do you need to fall before you're like, right, this is stupid now?
Past 20
Past 20.
is like past 20, and you could have a steal on your hands, an absolute steal.
I'm looking at the Jets
So yeah.
defense being transformed.
Yeah, I mean, there are
Arvell Reese
players.
at 2 and Peter Woods at 16.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a pretty compelling kind
Be a
pair of
flip.
additions.
Yep.
It would be pretty compelling. And if I think about Mason Graham last year, I would have Peter Woods ever so, a tier above as a player. Just my personal opinion.
100%. Like I said, we spoke about him quite a lot throughout the year. He didn't have his best year, but Like you
Yeah.
mentioned, there's a couple of reasons for that. One, play that position a lot. But two, Clemson were a dumpster fire.
Bad defense.
And
Yeah.
like we said with defensive tackles, they often don't get the stats, but they need their teammate. They do a lot of work that they need other people to finish off. And if the other guys aren't
Yeah.
finishing it off, it really limits what it looks like you're doing.
It does.
So it's difficult with defensive tackles sometimes to get away with that.
Yeah, it can be.
But moving on, number two, who came in at 32 for me, 32 and a quarter inch arms because that's so important these days. Another Buckeye. We spoke about a lot of them.
Yeah.
We will speak about a lot of them over the next few weeks, I believe.
Yeah. Yes.
And for as an FYI for everybody, the best player on the Ohio State team isn't even eligible to come out this year. So we'll talk about him next year.
Yes.
But Caden McDonald. 6'2", 326 pounds. And like I said, arm length 32 and a quarter, our hands 9 3/4. So nothing really off there.
No.
He's just a monster. Like his tackle for loss production was really, really high. Now, this is the opposite from the Clemson problem. His defense was built with that many people around it. You're like, it's difficult to isolate him. You're looking at two linebackers that are going to go in the first round and a safety that are going to go in the first round. When you include Caden McDonald in that, that's right up the middle of your defense is four players that are going to go in top 20 probably. All four. I think
Probably.
Caden McDonald's the only one that might not. Caleb Downs is going top five probably. Sonny Styles is now blew up and Arvell Reese. Like he's all round is good. He's got power, he's got pace, but he's also got leverage. He's really good at piercing gaps. And again, this is it's difficult because you don't know play calls when you're looking at it, but he seems to know the opponent's plays. And there was a lot of talk with Michigan about knowing that. Ohio State have got no accusations of this sort of stuff, but he seems to disrupt opponent plays almost before they're even in motion. It's like he's in the backfield when they're trying something, and he's there already. It's like he knew what gap there was going to be space at, and he exploits it. He's the rare thing with him for me, and it's not one that jumps off in the stat sheet often, but he can almost see round the tackle to where the ball carrier's going. And it's like often DTs especially, but D linemen as a whole, are either trying to beat you with rush, beat you with power, and just explode through you. But he's almost like taking you on, and while he's taking you on, his eyes are still in the backfield to see what's going on. So he's ready to break away either way rather than fighting through the block all the time. I think young DTs, especially, are really bad for thinking, I need to beat my opponent. No, your job is to get to the guy with the ball. Sometimes you don't need to get by your opponent to do that if the guy with the ball's already set, it's next to you. How often have you seen it? Where they're still trying to beat the tackle and the running back's 5 yards behind them running the other way. It or the guard. So he's really, really, really good at ball awareness. And it allows you to not be as like I think physically he's not as good as Peter Woods. But I think he's got a bit more game awareness just now. Now, again, he could also focus on just doing his job because the defense around him was that good. So how much of it was that, and how much Peter Woods was trying to do for the job of four guys? But I really, really like Caden McDonald. I don't think he's got the upside, but I think he's got a higher floor.
I think he's probably the best run defending defensive tackle in the draft.
He's
He's
massive.
possibly the best run defender, full stop. Something happened to him this year, and I think it's a lot to do with Matt Patricia, but the difference between him in 2024 and 2025 is that in 2025, he just had more playing time. He wasn't playing behind Tyreek Williams, and he was in a scheme that really kind of set him up to do well, surrounded by guys with talent. But ultimately, when you are the first line of defense and you're able to get 34 stops, which is ridiculous, and generate, 10 times more pressure than he ever had at any stage in his career as a pass rusher, when you're able to do that's often you. It's like when linebackers have that production, you can often say what's because of the guys in front of them. Well, there's no one in front of Caden McDonald except for the opponent. And when I watch him as a run defender, it's he either eats gaps or he moves the gap backwards. And as a pass rusher, while he doesn't always penetrate, he absolutely will occupy space. He will slowly move the interior of the pocket towards the quarterback, which is the idea. If you're not going to get home, at least collapse that pocket slowly and create pressure that way. And so, from that standpoint, he does everything you would want a player like him to do. He's never going to get you 8, 9 sacks, but he will be an excellent run defender and someone who is just a gap eater. And it has value. That's why teams pay Tavondre Sweat all that money. That's why teams trade for those guys. That's why teams trade for people like Milton Williams and Puna Ford, because those people have value in and of themselves. They raise the floor of a defensive line, and Caden McDonald is a very good example of a prospect that could potentially do that.
Also, lets other people focus on the flash plays. If you've got
Exactly.
someone there that's just eating up what they need to do, your edge rusher can suddenly pin his ear back a bit more, not concerned about
Yes.
covering what's going on inside them.
Yeah. Players either side of him will experience more success than they would without him being there.
Yep. And as somebody who watched his team get gashed for 6 yards a carry consistently all year,
Yeah.
everyone wants the flash plays, but you can't get the flash plays if they're not attempting to throw the ball because they don't need to stop the run. If you can't stop the run, teams will just run it on you all day, and you can have the best pass rusher in the world. If the team's not passing the ball, there's no point to them.
Yeah,
Like,
exactly.
you need to force them to pass to allow your pass rushers to get after it. It's like, if you can't stop the run, then everything else falls to pot.
Exactly. Exactly.
Was he your number
He
two?
led. He was my number
He
two.
was
It's
number
also
two.
just worth mentioning that he led all defensive tackles in stop percentage, so tackles that were considered to be stops. So 13.8%, and he had 3.6% missed tackle rate. Both of which, among players with more than 100 snaps, was top in the class. So
He's
it's
just a
like even
consistent performer.
the boring eat your vegetable stats he's best at, which it's really good.
Which is often what you want
It's
from a
like
DT.
basically yes. It's just if you want him to get 9 sacks, you're expecting the wrong thing.
Anything else you want to talk about on him?
No, I mean, just obviously people are going to sort of say, well, how do we separate him from the Sonny Styles and the Arvill Reese? Well, there's plenty of plays where you can.
Not
You just watch him and the impact he has.
yeah. And the problem is, people said that about the Georgia defense from a
Yeah.
few years ago. The Eagles have done quite well drafting them all. It's not hurt
Yeah,
them.
and there are lots of other teams who've managed to take those players that weren't immediately successful and make them at least into like solid starters. You think about Quay Walker and players like that who've become perfectly good starters for good teams as well. So it's like it is possible to have more than one good player on your roster and it not just to be all one or two guys.
Especially now.
Absolutely.
I think because the top three are kind of clear for everybody, but I have a feeling that you might be lower on one. So who's your number three?
So my number three is Lee Hunter.
Yes.
And
People are going to be asking.
typical.
Should we talk about who they'll be asking about right now, or do you want to start with your number three? Because I have a feeling
No,
anybody listening has got an idea.
let's go with my number four then, which
Yeah.
is Caleb Banks.
Yes. I'll let you go because you're obviously much lower on Caleb Banks than pretty much everybody. I
So
think.
I so it's not even that I'm low on him. It's you have to start with the measurables. So the measurables are ridiculous. So 6 foot 6, 327 pounds, hands that were 10 7/8, so basically 11-inch hands, and like the only D lineman in the NFL with 11-inch hands is DeForest Buckner. 35-inch arms, which puts him in the top like fifth percentile of drafted linemen of all time, and an 85.6-inch wingspan, which is a full inch wider than Kyle Pitts. He's 6 foot 6. He runs like a gazelle. He ran a 5.04 at 327 pounds. He vertical jumped 32 inches at that weight, and he broad jumped 9 foot 6. As a raw athlete, he's a top five pick, top
The
two
big
pick.
thing with the speed as well is it's not just at 300 odd pounds, it's 6 foot 6. At that height, you're off to a really slow start generally.
You
Like,
are,
they don't
yes.
recommend you doing short distances when you're 6 foot 6. The fact he's done that at that height is almost as impressive as doing it at that weight.
Even more impressive than his 40 time is the 10-yard split at 6 foot 6 of 1.76, which is really fast for someone of that height. That's remarkable. So as an athlete, he is, almost into like Chase Young territory, just that sort of tier below probably the Myles Garretts of this world, but is like a blue chip athlete.
Play any sport if he just fixed his weight for that sport.
Yeah, I'm convinced that if he dropped 40 pounds, he'd be an excellent basketball player, for
Yeah,
example.
like that sort of guy. If he built for a certain sport, he could play just about anything.
Exactly. His highest recorded GPS speed this year was 19.6 miles per hour, which is ridiculously fast at that size, with that weight. So we're looking at someone who is like the top 0.001% of humans on Earth. But he's nobody's number one. And it's all about, well, there's a couple of things. He only played a few games this year. He didn't play much this year. He was injured. So, I mean, you can kind of take that as with a pinch of salt, and that's all well and good. But the other problem you've got is he is remarkably inconsistent. It's, you can watch him and you know the athlete he is, and you're constantly asking yourself, how are you not more physically dominant? How are you not more making more plays? How are you not affecting the pocket more? How are you not making more run stops? How are you, even comes down to things like tackling as well. And how is he losing a one-on-one to players who are nowhere near the athlete he is? The problem with Caleb Banks is that you can see it is within him physically, but it never quite surfaces enough for you to convince yourself that he could ever be your number one.
My counter to it, and it's not necessarily to disagree with what you've seen, but it's to me a lot of that's coaching. And I think we often get, and this is where a lot of players peak at college, because if you were coached by Nick Saban, the chances are you're as close to fully developed as you're going to get. Like, there's not many NFL coaches that are better than Nick Saban. So you're almost like, you're going to a lesser coaching quality going from that Alabama team, whereas other players leave and have got a lot of coaching still in them to get better. And that Florida team, we speak about Clemson being a dumpster fire. That Florida team are a riot. And there's a lot of talent everywhere. A lot of blue chippers, and none of them performed to the level they should have.
Yeah,
People
there
thought the
is that.
quarterback was going to be a number one pick,
Yeah.
and he was dreadful. So part of me is like, and it's the old folly though as well, isn't it? It's like, how many times have we seen people take a quarterback with physical tools because they think they can be the one that will get the best out of them? And it turns out, no, they're just not that good, or they're not that coachable, or they're not accurate for that, whatever the reason is. And it could be that, but there's a part of me going, and maybe that's the hubris. If you could just get your mitts on them and mould them with that physical tools, there's so much to work with.
You see, the thing is, and then I've already talked about it with two players, and I mentioned so this conversation will also be coming up on the offensive line episode we do. Leverage is massive, and when you're 6 foot 6, you're immediately at a disadvantage in terms of leverage because a lot of the interior players that you'll be going up against will be smaller. So, for example, it's more desirable for a guard to be 6 foot 2, 6 foot 3 than it is for them to be 6 foot 8, because leverage inside is absolutely critical. Length is not quite the advantage you would think. So, but when you're 6 foot 6, you also, as well as being 6 foot 6, play with a really high pad level. It's really easy to give up your chest. And if you give up your chest, it's over. Because the moment you give up your chest, that's the biggest target you can give anybody to get hands on you. And if you've got a 6 foot 3 guard that is, even fundamentally skilled, if you give up your chest, they'll get their hands inside your frame and they will, if not able to stop you, they'll be able to control you enough that you're not really a factor. And that's my biggest problem with him. He just plays way too high and gives up his chest far too often, which means that as a run defender, he is very hit or miss. It also means that as a pass rusher, it's like you see guys that are like 3'10", just stonewall him. And you're like, this is fundamentals. And this is the problem that I had with Tyree Wilson as well. If we think about the kind of athlete that Tyree Wilson is as a prospect, there's a reason he went high, because he's a very similar athlete to Banks. That he had a really slow get off. Banks doesn't have that problem. But Wilson also had a terrible pad level. And it's kind of like, that's how he used to sort of, there were concerns about that. And those concerns were absolutely borne out at the next level. And Tyree Wilson is kind of like, he's now considered to be a serviceable mid-end starter, but that's all he is at this stage of his career, a guy with all the physical ability in the world, but it's not fully realized because he just had these fundamental shortcomings. Some people can overcome it, some people can't. And I just wonder with Caleb Banks, is it going to be the same problem? Because I just see it. I look and I think, wow, it's just Harry Wilson turned up for 11 with maybe a few more sort of pass rush chops and a bit more sort of bit more rounded out. But like, I don't know. I don't see that he's worth a top five pick. What he is, right, is he is the kind of guy that the Bengals would draft. Just, let's draft this athletic freak that we have to kind of squint at to see if it's going to work.
Nah, not a chance. He's defensive. They don't draft defense, and they don't draft tackles. Linemen.
That's all right. They'll try and turn him into a tackle
Yeah.
then.
That's the long-term solution.
But it's like, for me, that's my concerns. I'm not saying that he's going to be Tyree Wilson, and
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that problem can't be solved and he can't fix that problem, because it's ridiculous to sort of just say that outright that you can't fix it. But it's a difficult problem to fix, and it's something that, mean, he struggles. For me, he's likely to struggle early.
No, fair. I can't see him dropping that far. I think
I
teams,
can't either. I
right
can't
or
either.
wrong, teams fall in love with that sort of athletic profile, and
Oh yeah.
somebody will fall in love with it and take him. Happens every year.
You stand and look at him, and you're like, if you knew nothing else about him, you just stood and looked at him at the combine, you just go, I'm drafting him top 10.
Yeah.
He's the first guy off the bus.
Yep.
So yeah.
Right. Next up, your actual number three then.
Lee Hunter.
Lee Hunter.
So the problem with Lee Hunter is how do we separate Lee Hunter from the Texas Tech defense? That's our problem. Well, again, it's actually quite easy. So the thing about Lee Hunter is when he was at UCF, he was always a good player. And the
Yes.
second you got Lee Hunter into an even halfway serviceable program, you then saw him immediately transform into this next tier player. Now, unlike everybody else who talked about, say, Lee Hunter does have a problem with missed tackles, but it's improved. 9.8% is not amazing. What Lee Hunter is really, really good at is he's really good at disrupting on the defensive line. 25 stops is, I think, it's top 10 in the class this year among D tackles with more than 100 snaps.
Yep.
He's been unnervingly consistent. He's been an out of, he is one of those D tackles who is good in both phases of the game. He's not elite at any one phase, but he is a 7.5 out of 10 at everything. He is a high effort player. He is relentless. He has a perfect blend of speed and power. He's not an elite athlete, but he is a very good athlete. He
Yeah.
is the kind of level of athlete that, with the right coaching, is the kind of athlete that is, if not a blue chip, more sort of like a green chip. It's like that tier below, but it's still more than good enough to have for a starting defensive tackle. The only concern with Lee Hunter is that he's a little bit older. The other thing I'm forgot to mention about Caleb Banks is that Caleb Banks is a player with untapped potential, but Caleb Banks is 23. That's a little bit old to have untapped potential. Lee
Yes.
Hunter has fully realized potential when he is 23. So there's a big difference between the two players, and I think he is somebody who you can feel pretty good about floor and about him being somebody who within a year or two could easily be starting for you in the interior. He's versatile. His size is highly desirable from just a measurable standpoint. Let me just get his measurables up. So yeah. So yeah. 6'3", 318 pounds. So he's a little bit shorter and bigger. 33 2/8 arm length, which is perfectly within reasonable. His hands are a bit small at 9 inches. His wingspan is 80, which is fine and well within like what teams would consider to be a normal tolerance. And it's like, and then you look at things like 5'1", 8'40". He's vertical and broad. It's not a massively explosive player, but he's powerful, technically fundamentally sound. He's well coached. He's a good, if not great, athlete, and just someone who consistently plays at a level where you can see him being a good starter down the road. Somebody who you would pick at 25 and not feel terrible about. You feel pretty okay about it. And someone with just the right sort of DNA to succeed as a D tackle in the NFL.
The interesting one is that whole Tech D line were incredible.
It's difficult, isn't it?
And I have a feeling we might be talking about one of them when we do our edge class. I mean, I don't know that for certain,
Just think, I
but
mean,
I think there's a
maybe
chance.
there's a chance that one of them
Yeah,
might be
well,
on the episode.
yes. And it comes back to similar to the Kaden McDonald one, but at some point you can't be punishing him because he played with a good team. Like
You
it's
shouldn't.
it all what it also did is they came together quickly. That is not a team that got built through 3 4 years. It was a lot of transfers that came together very quickly, and what that means is they're clearly one very coachable, adaptable, and willing to play their role, which is a D tackle. is unless you're going to be Aaron Donald, the majority of the D tackles will be playing within a system and have a role to do. If you can do that, you will be very, very valuable. And I think we're now getting to the ones I don't think he'll go in the first personally. I just don't see it. But if you can get him in the late 30s, early 40s, you're going to get a productive player for a good few years. And I think you could do a lot worse than that.
I think so too. And again, it's like, I think he is just, again, he possesses special strength. Special. It's
What
special
else
strength.
does, like you said, on the missed tackles kind of coming down each year, it shows he's coachable. Like, and again, he went from a team that wasn't, I mean, UCF don't have the bet, like, he would have been there with Gus, wouldn't he? And Gus is hardly known as being a defensive mastermind. So as soon as he got somewhere with that, it suddenly improved drastically. And I think most NFL teams will bank on being able to fix those wee fundamentals as well. I think you could do a lot worse than taking him in the late 30s, early 40s. Any earlier would be a bit rich for my blood, though. I don't think the ceiling's quite there for a first rounder.
I think if he did go, it's because he is of the guys that we've talked about. He is the first proper sort of knows one tech that we've talked about. So he's somebody who is literally in the A gap and is just like, he can eat two gaps and
Just
he
run
is
at me and
just,
I'm eating you.
yeah, eat a double team. I'll eat a double team for you. I'll eat a double team for you every single play. And on first and second down, he's someone who would have massive value. It's for me, for him to develop to being that next echelon of player, it's about how he then builds on that to be effective as an occasional pass rushing force, someone who can get 3 or 4 sacks a season. Whereas at the moment, I just think he's going to be a high quality sort of A and B gap sort of nose defender.
Makes sense. Now, where's next? So, we did Peter Woods, did Caleb Banks, did Caitlin McDonald, did Lee Hunter. So you had Lee, so you went Peter Woods, Caleb Banks, Lee Hunter, Caden McDonald in that order.
No,
No,
Peter Woods.
sorry, Peter Woods, Caden McDonald, Lee Hunter, Caleb Banks. And I went Peter Woods, Caden McDonald, Caleb Banks. See, my number four was Kristen Miller from Georgia.
Talk to me.
So did you watch a lot of them, other than just the
I
game
watched
tape?
about 3 or 4 games.
3 or 4 games, right? So he's massive for a start.
Yes, there is
He's
that.
I'm going to get his actual measurements up. So he's 6'4", 321 pounds. He's got 33-inch hand, arms and 10-inch hands. Now, what he is he's sturdy and he's square, which
Which in
is,
itself is a trait. So
yes, especially for a D tackle, it's a proper take. What he is, his power comes. He almost explodes after contact rather than into contact, which can be a weakness and a positive depending if you know how to use that. I don't think he's quite mastered it yet, but there's times where he does it and you're like, holy crap. And I think if you can master that, it could be dangerous because exploding into contact, you've got the heads up and you've got the advantage at the point of contact, but exploding as you get contact or through the contact, it's almost like you get the note of surprise and it allows you almost time, especially DT, because what often happens is quarterback either takes it under center and drops, or way more often now they're sitting in gun. Even for runs, they're sitting in the gun. So having that exploding into contact, you can almost prepare for where, sorry, exploding through contact as opposed to into contact. You can almost see where the ball's going before you decide where you're pushing. So if you're if you're building up caught if you're building up explosiveness into contact, you're almost deciding where you're pushing before you know where the ball is. If you're exploding as you make contact, you can almost be pushing where the ball is because you can see the ball before you're pushing properly. I don't know if that ex if I'm explaining that well,
No,
but
you are explaining it.
the
Fine.
downside is you need to master it because you can be on your backside if they come at contact with explosiveness and you're not ready for it. So I think he's got a bit more of a embarrassing loss tape than the rest of the guys on this list. He's got pancaked a lot more than the other guys on this list, and I think that could happen quite a lot in his first year in the NFL.
So, you've kind of hit it on the head. It's kind of where I had a problem with him. It's the I get the splash plays are great, but it's like I can't really get over some of the aspects of his game that just make me go, really? Really? Just look at the size of you. How is this happening to you? And
The
what I
Tennessee
did,
game is a bad one. I don't know if you've seen the Tennessee game.
it's one of the games I watched,
Yeah,
unfortunately, and
it
it's not.
was
So the problem he's got, and I had to sort of slow it down a lot to sort of really sort of work out if what I was seeing was what was happening, and it turns out that it was. So the problem with him is that first step and his hands are just a tick slow, which is why he gets blown off the ball sometimes, especially by guys who are that much quicker off the ball and get into his frame and just literally knock him off his feet. The thing is that if they are a lesser athlete than him, he's big and strong enough that he can just anchor down and absorb impact. But there are times where he will get struck square in the chest, and it's just like he's been hit in the face with a stick or something, and he just sort of does this and flails a bit. And it's kind of I don't need that. And then the interior defensive line, I can't get with that. That's not what I need, Bob. I'd rather have somebody who for 50 snaps doesn't move backwards or fall over. I'll give up the splash plays just for somebody who isn't going to get, on their backside. But and when he is able to kind of anchor down and be powerful, he's really good at actually shedding the block. He's really good at that. He is also, when he guesses correctly, really, really good at sort of blowing things up. The problem is that as a run defender, there's too much what I call peekaboo. So when you're engaged, when any defensive lineman anywhere on the line is engaged with a blocker in a run play, you'll sort of try and peek around the guy who's blocking you without looking like you're peeking, because the moment you flash your helmet inside, that's sometimes a cue for the back to head for the outside shoulder of the guy they're running behind. The moment you put your helmet inside or outside that blocker's frame, you're giving away which way you're going to go. He does that a lot. It's a lot of peekaboo, which kind of he sets himself up whereby he will be so peekaboo and convinced that it's going through one gap that he'll do it so early that the back will just cut back and run off the opposite shoulder of the blocker, and it's like he's out of the play. So it's kind of there's that aspect of it as well. So I think if he has to play teams that run a lot of zone, but with a lot of zone blocking, where the back just literally reads that, he's not going to be immediately as effective as he might be. And that gave me so much pause, even when I think about his power profile and just the size. It gave me a real pause for thought.
100%. I think what this kind of this player in particular kind of highlights is just it's a different viewpoint on drafting. It's like, and it what it often comes down to is almost scouts versus coaches. Coaches will say, "Give me the player's three best plays, and I'll make something of it." Scouts almost look at the wider range of it, and It's I've always kind of for certain positions, quarterback I've totally changed back and forth over the years. Just the more I do it, the more I tweak my ratings. DT, D lineman as a whole, I've always been right, show me the flash plays. It's can I make something of it? But it's six of one, half a dozen of the other, and you could ask 100 people and they'll all have different variations of what's important as their scouting players. But from what I'm hearing is we basically both think the same thing. It's just where we're valuing importance of it.
It's just so important that a defensive lineman is not it doesn't move backwards. It's just really important to me. It's just really important to me. It's just a thing that I value really, really highly.
It's like I'm almost the opposite. I want flash in my D lineman. I want flash in my O lineman. I want watch your floor. But meh, we could go around in circles on that one.
There's
So
no
where do you
wrong
have him?
answer.
How far down have you went with him?
I probably have him seventh,
Seventh.
which is fine. And I think, if you're like at the back of it of round two, it's fine. It's fine because there's a world where he could be a good starter in a couple of years. It's just you need to kind of take him to school a bit. But
He's still
like,
young as well, though, is he not? I
yeah,
think
and
he's 21.
I don't think he'll ever be like a ridiculously explosive tackle, but he could develop into somebody who is good, which is, if you take someone on day two and they are good, that's a
You'll take
win.
that. Yeah, you'll take that.
You take that. But yeah, around after like pick 50, I'm totally fine with it. Totally fine with it.
So we've went Peter Woods, Caleb Banks, Cade McDonald, Kristen Miller, Lee Hunter. You said you had six really you want to talk about. One, two, three, four. So we should have two more for you.
So,
That was my five that I had to talk about. So I'm going to take a guess on who your next two are.
guess.
Darryl Jackson and Grayson Holton.
Yes, correct. But in a different order. Grayson Holton, then Darryl Jackson Jr.
Yeah, I wasn't
So,
really. No.
but no, you guessed absolutely correctly. We might talk about Dante Corleone. I have watched Dante Corleone. We might talk a little
Dante
bit about
Corleone.
him.
Jesus Christ, the Cincinnati boy. Is he not expected to go in
Yeah.
fifth round or something?
I know, but like
Oh,
you
fair. If
still
you
have
like
to
someone, you like someone. Like,
you've got to talk about the athlete. I feel like you have to talk about Dante Corleone just because
he's
he'll
named
show up in the
Corleone as
NFL.
well. That can't hurt.
But also when you see him, I think when you see him on an NFL field for the first time, you'll be like, what? But yeah, how does that move like that is the reaction you'll have. It's like Tommy Togi, I turned up 20. But, anyway, so yeah, so Grayson Holton, D lineman for Oklahoma. So he's a really, really good athlete. And like, he's got ridiculous agility, ridiculous quickness. He's got pass rush chops that some of the guys in this class don't have. He's probably the smallest of all of these guys at 6'3 and 293 pounds, which is, more somebody who's more projected to be more of a three tech. He was a four-star recruit in the 2022 class. I mean, he didn't really play much in his first couple of years, freshman or a junior. I think he reached around 30 total tackles in the first 2 seasons. But then this season, he kind of developed into, I think, a player who maybe should have gone back for another year, but someone who I think, if there's anybody who's going to be a day two guy that shocks people, it's going to be him because he has things that no one else in this class really has. Is real pass rush moves, real pass rush chops, speed, short area quickness, a real sort of ability to shoot a gap, get through and make tackles for loss, or chase a quarterback down in open space. Got really good upper body strength and like really strong hands, and just is somebody who chases. The reason that people aren't massively high on him is just because of his size. But 6'3", 293 on the interior, you do sort of worry. There's the odd wasted step as well when he gets out of his stance. He can be a little bit sort of slow to recognize when he's being, when the reach block's happening and he can kind of get moved out of the gap or scooped out, even though he is a really, really good sort of player with some really good movement skills. He also suffers from a similar problem that Caleb Banks suffers from. It's not as pronounced. He plays a little bit higher sometimes. So when he isn't playing with good leverage, double teams can absolutely own him. But when he is playing with good leverage, he's actually really very strong for his size. He just needs to, again, work on the pad level. Because when he tries to bull rush people and he isn't sort of, and he's a little bit too upright, it just doesn't work. But he's someone I think who is developmental. I think he is the sort of person you pick after pick 70. He's in a rotation, and before you know it, he is, after a couple of years, suddenly he's a starter from out of nowhere. And I think he's somebody who could surprise people. I also think he's the kind of player who every once in a while might just have a season where he has 7 or 8 sacks in a contract year, which is like, and you might even find that once or twice a season, he'll make a play that just makes you go, oh my God.
Holy crap.
And so I think there's some upside there, and there's enough upside for me to think that he's a bargain at the end of day two. And just, I think if anybody is sort of an under the radar potential star, it's him.
No, makes sense. Like I said, I've not really watched much beyond that, so I'll take your word for it on him.
He's good. He's good.
That's past few weeks have been a bit hectic for me, so I got the 5, 6 that I thought were up for me.
Dude, I mean, it's like, even without having a normal life, football itself has been nuts. It's like this week of free agency has just
Oh.
taken me to the very edge of my sanity.
I didn't even know what to think about it. I didn't.
I don't know. I don't
Alas,
know.
that we could go, we'd end up down a rabbit hole. Let's just avoid that just now. But yeah, it's been wild. It's been wild.
It has, and it's been very, very difficult for me to kind of really have all the headspace that I really, really needed. But I kind of knew it would be this way, so I prepared for this episode a few days earlier than I normally would. I knew that free agency would be mental. So yeah, and then the final prospect I want to talk about, Darryl Jackson. So if you are looking for a guy with length, he's your guy. He's big. So 6'5", 337 pounds. Big effort player, but primarily is like, he's definitely a run defender. Let's put it that way. And it's kind of like, he's very, very big and very, very physically imposing. And you can look at him and he's the kind of guy that you want to be first off the bus again. And he has an ability to sort of cave pockets in and make big plays in the run game and lift interior linemen off their feet and all that. But none of it is particularly well trained. It's all just him being a big person. The sheer physical tools that he was clearly born and blessed with, what little coaching he has had, means that he's able to play, be successful, relatively successful as a player. But it's very, very obvious that there's something missing. There's been a shortfall in like coaching, teaching. Fundamentally, if he was just 15 to 20% more sound, he'd be so much better. Again, pad level's a problem. It's like, He isn't very good at recognizing when he's being punked by linemen, and he needs to work on counter moves as a pass rusher. But the raw material means that he's a pretty compelling guy for the start of day three, late day two. Not quite the upside that Grayson Holden's got, because I don't think he's as explosive as Grayson Holden is off the ball. But I think he's somebody who, again, could easily develop into being a pretty good run defender. Whether or not he'll ever have pass rush upside is, I can't really tell. But that's the problem. You can't tell. All you know is he's big, strong, athletic, and there's a football player in there somewhere. It's intriguing to try and sort of find that in him, but it's whether you have the patience for it. As
Yeah.
if you do, and you think, well, he's a developmental guy and you're a good team, it's like, so if you're Howie Roseman, it's like pick number 98, you're like, why not?
Why
Why
not
not?
throw it in? Take a
But
punt.
if you're the Jets and you're banking on it to be something good, don't bother. It's
Hey,
like
hey.
you're wasting your time. But if he can go somewhere where there's good coaching and it's a situation where he isn't needed to be the guy right now and they'll
Yeah.
take their time with him, you could be onto something.
That makes sense.
So I think he's somebody as well who could develop into a nice little player. Maybe not quite the ceiling of a Grayson Holton, but somebody who could develop into a nice little run defender. Little, not actually little, because he's
Yeah,
massive.
figuratively little.
But yeah. Yeah.
Literally massive, figuratively little.
Exactly.
Do you want to talk about the Godfather then?
Dante Corleone. So it's, I'm almost making him sound like a sideshow freak. And he is a freak. Okay. Do you know how I know he's a freak? Because he's been on Bruce Feldman's freaks list for the last 3 years in a row. One of the few players that actually has. So Dante Corleone is 6'1", barely. Okay, so he's not tall. Okay, so we've established that. So we've established he's
Well,
not
come
that
on.
tall.
Some of them are not all as tall as you, James.
I'm only 6'3" and a half. 34
Yeah.
inch arms, 10 inch hands, and a wingspan of 82. sorry, sure. Although I am 6'3" and 180 pounds. sorry, it's not that. But yeah, Dante Corleone, 6'1".
Yep.
He's 300, he's not even 6'1", he's 6'0" and a half. He's 336 pounds. He's the heaviest guy in the class. And he is one of the shortest. The guy benched 485 as a freshman, as an 18-year-old. He squatted like three people, and like is
That's
just
not
huge.
normal. That's not
Not
normal.
own but listen to this, okay? He ran a 40-yard dash last summer. His 10-yard split was faster than Caleb Banks. 1.71 seconds. Do you have any idea what that would
1.71.
look like on someone that size? That's
1.71.
mental. That's mental. That's
That's not
like
even funny.
a dainty tight end time.
Yeah,
He's
that's not. That's mental.
336 pounds and barely 6 feet tall. He did a three cone in 7.4, which is like at that size is nuts. It would have also been the third fastest for combine this year if he'd done all, if he'd done it this quick. Oh no, he did do it. He was third fastest. But like, and the thing about him is he plays exactly the way you think someone like that would play.
Yeah.
It's like a wish.com Warren Sapp.
B takes
I mean
up.
that. Well, yeah, basically. And it's kind of like you think, well, what good is that? Well, it's a lot of good, because if you take a player like that, if you're looking for a guy who can be like developmental nose tackle, it's him.
Yeah.
The athlete, he is kind of a little bit undisciplined, he's a little bit wild. He doesn't always play with the greatest pad level. But more often than not, he's better than most interior linemen playing in front of him. That is also because he plays at Cincinnati. But For me, he is probably someone again who makes his way into the end of day two and ends up going to a good team that are looking for a developmental player. You can get sort of hung up on the downsides of someone like him, which is that realistically he's not going to be great on all three downs. He's potentially a first and second down player only. But
You need those guys as well, though.
yeah, but the other thing is though, he does flash as a pass rusher because he's so quick off the ball. It's like, and you can sort of, you could almost squint and see that he could have, could be an okay pass rusher. He's only ever going to win with power, though. Only ever going to win with power. I don't think he's ever going to be like someone who's going to give you a ghost move or a rip. You know, it's going to be the bull rush or a two-hand swipe, and that's probably going to be it. But like,
Makes sense.
that he can eat double teams. He just eats them, and that has value in and of itself. But there is the medical concern as well. So blood clots were found in his lungs.
Oh.
So it will require treatment, and he will be out for a while he's being treated for that. So don't be surprised if you find that he is still there, round five, round six. But
Be
then,
a
you
shame
know,
if that's why.
you take a chance. You take a chance. I think if it weren't for that, and if he had maybe a little bit more sort of pass rush chops, he'd probably be a slam dunk back day two. But I quite like him. I think there's something there.
Mean, we all need a mafia mob in our defense, so
And just
take
imagine someone with that name, you know,
that.
being like useful and successful. It'd be
Need to go
hilarious.
to Philadelphia so you can link up with Big Dom.
Yeah. But also, you know, because it's like, I think that would be the kind of environment where he could be absolutely just like really successful. But, you know, he'll be fine. I think he's an interesting player. And if the medical stuff kind of is something that can be overcome, he's interesting. I find him very interesting indeed. I think that's basically the class in a nutshell. Because I think if you go any lower, you're kind of looking at guys that do one thing either very
Aye.
well and everything else they do is awful,
You're
or
just taking
a
a
guy
punt at that point, aren't you?
it's all a bit too much squinting involved. I mean, you know, but this is like the six, seven players that, six or seven, sorry, players you feel good about. Yeah, I know. Don't do the hand signal. Right. Okay. All right. Apparently, we can't do that anymore. The great meme reset rendered six, seven no longer relevant, or whatever that means. I don't care. I have children. It's enough that they do it. I don't need to, just don't want to know. But anyway, the six or seven players. So we probably should have, it's probably about as deep as we probably should have gone. I think sort of media, when they go like 10, 15 deep, it's just showing off.
Just trying to make up names for the sake of it at that point.
It would be really interesting to see if you could release like a fake draft pod where you had like 15 players that were totally made up facts, and whether anybody would believe you. It'd be
Have you
hilarious.
seen that where the player, like Chelsea fan TV went to Stamford Bridge and were
Yeah,
asking
yeah.
fans what they thought about the youth team players coming through, and it was just made up names, and the fans were obviously too embarrassed to say they didn't know the youth players. It was like, oh, he's a good player, I think he'll be a great future and all that, and it was completely made up names.
Number eight on my board. Number eight on my D tackle board. Engelbert Fingerbanger. So yeah, over. I might try to sneak Engelbert Fingerbanger in next year and see if anyone notices. I don't know.
We need a new name, though. You've wasted it now. You've told us. We
I
need a
know.
different fake name.
All right, okay, whatever. Yeah, okay, fine. Thanks a lot. No one's gonna remember. I'll sneak it in next year. It's fine. It's okay. It's all right. So yeah, those are the guys I've got. I would have talked about Tim Keenum the third, but just because he's got an A on the side of his helmet, I'm not gonna talk about, sorry, just because they've got an A on the side of their helmet. So there we go. That's all I'd be talking about. But yeah, so D tackle is a massively important position in the NFL. Anybody who tells you that isn't is dumb. Needs to watch the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Makes
So
sense.
yeah, where do we want to go next for the next position, do you think?
Let me go offense anyway.
Yeah.
So either running back or wide receiver, I think. And I'm
Let's
happy with either.
go. You see, the watches and rewatches required for wide receiver are going to take months. The watches and rewatches for running back could take a day.
Yeah, it's
Way up
basically
in my
one
head.
guy and then a bunch of
There's some interesting players that there's. It, but it is one guy and some interesting players. That's what it is. But I think, yeah, running back. I think, yeah,
Running back
I'm
then.
good with running back. I think I need a couple of weeks for wide receiver,
Sounds good.
which is quite a few. So yeah, running back definitely next.
That works for me. Right, I will let you get going.
Yeah, take it easy, Josh, and all you listeners out there. But yeah,
Cheers, everyone.
thanks.
Enjoy the running backs next week. Yeah, cheers.
Don't Google Engelbert Fingerbanger, please.
Please do, and then blame James.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, cheers.